This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Ruled the Muslim world for 45 years. 45 years which are essentially considered 46 years. Again, depending on which direction you round it off, right? But 45 to 46 years, Suleiman the Magnificent ruled the Ottoman Empire. He's considered the greatest of the Ottoman rulers. This is the peak. This is the golden age. This is as big and as great and as amazing as the Ottoman Empire would ever reach. When Suleiman dies and his son Selim II comes into power, that's the beginning of the end. That's when the decline begins that goes on for 300 years until the collapse at World War I. But if you had to choose one point in Ottoman history and say this was it, this was the height of Ottoman power, it was the 46-year reign of Suleiman the Magnificent. Now, TV shows have been made about Suleiman, but I wouldn't recommend it the way I would the Eturu or the Usman shows, even though it's more historically accurate, because it's a lot more raunchy. It's a lot more there's a lot more immorality in it. You see, that show was made a generation before the Eturu shows, and Turkey was a bit more of a modern place at that time. So the show has a lot of things in it that wouldn't be acceptable for Muslims to view. Although historically it's very accurate. It's far more historically accurate than the Eturul or Usman shows. And it covers the entire 46-year reign over 5 seasons, really showing the political intrigue, the family life, the military conquests, the power of Suleiman the Magnificent. Unfortunately, it also has a lot of immorality in it. Therefore, it's not something I would recommend, right? Nonetheless, it exists for those of you who want to know about it for knowing what resources are out there. It does exist, right? So, Suleiman the Magnificent, he ruled for 46 years, and he's considered the greatest of the Ottoman rulers. I mean, he's called the Magnificent for a reason. His reign was magnificent. His palace, right till today, his palaces are still up there. Many of the buildings built in his time are still up there. What's interesting about Suleiman is that it's not just him that was amazing, but it's the people he surrounded himself with. His Grand Vizier Ibrahim Pasha, his wife Hurrem, his head Alim or Mufti Abu Sud Effendi, the head of his pirates, the head of his pirate troops, Barbarossa. Someone else who came to mind, it just slipped out of my mind now. But nonetheless, these are all famous people, right? And all of these famous people lived in Istanbul in the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent, were close to him, worked with him, and contributed to the greatness of his reign. That this was a time where just all of these different forms of greatness combined. We had great ulama like Abu Sud Effendi. We had great politicians like Suleiman the Magnificent. We had some of the most famous women in Muslim history like Hurrem Sultan. We had great pirates in Muslim history like Barbarossa. And all of this at the same time, contributing to the greatness that was the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent. So, Suleiman had the most powerful army in the history of the Ottoman Empire and perhaps in the history of Islam. Really, if you're going to take a look at the size and the pure power of the Ottoman army at the time of Suleiman, it was perhaps the most powerful the Muslim world had seen until that time. The Janissaries had grown into this massive army, well equipped with guns and cannons, and they had expanded into the oceans through a fleet of pirate ships led by the famous Barbarossa. So they were able to invade many European lands that were islands or that were far away from the coast of the Ottoman Empire, and were able to raid these lands and take over these lands. So the army of Suleiman was very powerful, and he was able to conquer many, many territories to such an extent that his army or his empire, and this is the height of the power of the Ottomans, his empire was spread over 3 continents, right? Africa, Asia, and Europe. And what is today? 21 countries. There are literally 21 countries in the world today that combined together were the Ottoman Empire at the time of Suleiman the Magnificent. These include countries in Europe, countries in Asia, and countries in Africa, as well as the entire Middle East. In general, he was considered a just ruler. There are some controversial things that he did. And this is for anyone in power. I mean, you're going to stay in power for 46 years, dealing with family members and friends trying to take their power away from you. Then you're going to deal with some, you know, difficult choices. And Suleiman definitely had to make some difficult choices to keep his empire together, to keep his empire stable. There were rebellions internally from the Janissaries, from some of his closest friends, from some of his family. And he dealt with these sometimes in the right way, sometimes in the wrong way. But in general, he was considered a just ruler in his treatment of the average Muslim and his the way he ran his kingdom. Muslim and non-Muslim alike were given all of their rights in the Ottoman Empire during these 46 years of greatness. So this is the Golden Age, right? If you had to if you had to expand the Golden Age, you would say from Muhammad the Conqueror to Suleiman the Magnificent. If you had to narrow it down to one reign, it would be these 50 years, these five decades in which Suleiman ruled the Ottoman Empire. That this was the height of its power, the height of its greatness. And I just remembered the one more person I was supposed to mention earlier, Mimar Sinan. Mimar Sinan was the head architect of Suleiman, right? And he is considered the greatest architect in the history of the Muslim world. Many of the buildings that he built 400 years ago during the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent are still working today. They're still operational. They're still around. They have survived multiple earthquakes, and you can find them across the Muslim world in many different countries, particularly in Istanbul. Many of the classical palaces and masjids in Istanbul that go back to the time of Suleiman the Magnificent were built by Mimar Sinan. So again, look at the people surrounding Suleiman. Abu Sud Effendi was the greatest scholar of that time. Barbarossa may be the greatest Muslim pirate commander of all times. Mimar Sinan is the greatest Muslim architect perhaps of all time. And all of these people work for Suleiman the Magnificent. So you can see why it's considered a magnificent reign and a magnificent time for this empire. So many historians, including many, many non-Muslim historians, consider Suleiman as the greatest king of that era. That 400 years ago, if you looked across the entire world, Muslim and non-Muslim alike, there is not a single ruler that comes close to the power, the glory, the justice, the length of reign, and the accomplishments of Suleiman. Right? This is by far the greatest king of that century. He conquered many European lands, so many parts of the European world, particularly the Balkan areas and areas surrounding Hungary, like the Hungary-Ottoman borders, became part of the Muslim world during that time, as well as many of the islands off the coast of Europe, thanks to his pirate armies. But Suleiman had one weakness that would eventually lead to the downfall of the Ottoman Empire, or bring in the cracks for the downfall empire, and that was his love of his wife, Hürrem, which would caused him to make some disastrous political mistakes that would eventually see the end of the Golden Age and the beginning of the decline period. So, what else do we know about Suleiman? Sorry, I mistakenly repeated a slide here. I'm pretty sure I was supposed to write something else here. Okay, again, I apologize for that. I was supposed to have a second slide about Suleiman here, and I think I forgot to edit it. Okay, move on to the next slide about his two main right-hand people who played an important role. I'm just trying to remember what I was supposed to include in this slide and why I duplicated it. Right. So, Suleiman rules for 46 years, and externally, the empires around him are not much of a threat. He is able to take over many of these lands. He's able to establish his power, grow, and keep the empire large and powerful and wealthy. But internally, he has to deal with a lot of problems. There are plagues. So the smallpox pandemic takes place during the reign of Suleiman the Magnificent. There are revolt. So twice, at least twice, the Janissary corps revolt against Suleiman. The first time is because of the because of a pay issue. They weren't happy with how much he was paying them. The second time, we'll come to this a bit later, but when he executes his son, who they were hoping would be the next caliph, the Janissaries, who were very loyal to his son, revolt against him and begin rioting and looting. And the third big problem he faced was his family. So in Suleiman's family, because he is this rich and powerful ruler over this massive empire, the most rich and powerful person at that time, he develops internally some enemies that will eventually cause the downfall of the Ottoman Empire in the long run. Now, what's interesting, I want to look at two people who were very close to Suleiman and examine their lives, because what's interesting about studying their lives is it really shows us how different slavery in the Muslim world was compared to the West. And we have to discuss this very controversial topic of slavery. The fact is that slavery is not haram in Islam. And for a person, through a war, to take prisoners of war and enslave them and become the owner of those people is not technically haram. It's not haram either for a man to have an intimate relationship with his slave woman. Right, these are things which are clearly halal in the Quran and in the Sunnah, and were practiced throughout Muslim history until recently, where because Islam does not command slavery, it simply allows it, and the whole world has given it up, Muslims have given it up as well. Right? It's not compulsory, it's just something that's, it's not considered immoral the way it was considered immoral in modern society. And this is something very difficult for many people today to digest. The idea that Islam doesn't consider slavery immoral. But one of the ways to understand it is to realize that the way slaves were treated in the Muslim world was very different from that which most of us picture. Most of us, our only understanding of slavery is Western slavery, particularly America and the way they treated the African Americans. That's the only picture we have of slavery. Slavery in the Muslim world was a very different phenomenon. It was a man owning another person, but as per the rites of Islam, that person had to be treated well, fed well, clothed well, given opportunities to buy their freedom, given opportunities to grow as a person, and basically treated well. And so slaves triumph in the Muslim world. We already looked before at the example of the Mamluks. The Mamluks are the best example of how powerful a slave can be in the Muslim world while still being owned by another person. The next best example of that is the slaves of Suleiman, particularly Ibrahim Pasha and Hürrem Sultan, both of whom, at least Hürrem in the beginning and Ibrahim throughout his life, were the slaves of Suleiman the Magnificent. So who was Ibrahim Pasha? Ibrahim Pasha was he went through the Janissary system, right? He was a slave for a Christian boy taken from a Christian village, raised in the Ottoman palace, given to Suleiman as a slave, and he was around the same age as Suleiman, and he was given to him as a slave as while he was still a young boy, and they became best friends. So again, you know, the way people treated slaves back then, it wasn't how the West treated slaves. Rather, already we can see that the prince and his slave are best friends, right? And this friendship would last almost a lifetime, almost a lifetime. So Suleiman grows up, he becomes the king, and Ibrahim Pasha becomes like his head advisor. Not only does Ibrahim Pasha become the head advisor to the Khalifa, but he marries the Khalifa's sister. So he becomes his brother-in-law. Then he becomes the Grand Vizier. Now, the Grand Vizier is the most powerful position in the empire after the Khalifa. But while Ibrahim Pasha holds this position, he was technically even more powerful than Suleiman. What do we mean by this? Suleiman was very distracted by family life. He had a large family and he wanted to make time for them. So, because he loved and trusted Ibrahim so much, he handed over to Ibrahim the authority to run the empire. So Ibrahim Pasha, as the Grand Vizier, would meet with delegations, meet with diplomats, issue verdicts. He basically ran the empire. It was almost as if he was the caliph, while Suleiman was in the palace enjoying his time with his family. So at one point in time, Ibrahim Pasha is literally the most powerful person in the world. He makes the decisions about war and peace. He makes the decisions about economic economic growth and anything related to wealth. He makes decisions related to reform of society. He is the most powerful person. Suleiman hands over everything to him, trusting him fully. But Ibrahim is still his slave. So here we have a man's slave, who is also his best friend, who is also his brother-in-law, who is also his grand vizier, who is also the man he hands over the full authority to run the kingdom to. And Ibrahim does this for many years, perhaps 8 to 10 years, right? I can't remember the exact amount. But for many years, Ibrahim is running the kingdom, despite being a slave, and Suleiman is enjoying family life. Everything's going fine, until Suleiman discovers that Ibrahim had been deceiving him and using that power for personal gains. So it seems that once Ibrahim became the most powerful person in the Muslim world, he became arrogant, he became greedy, he began to misuse state funds for personal gains, he began to have nepotism in terms of who he would appoint to power, he began to have a lot of secrets from Suleiman that Suleiman wasn't happy with. Suleiman gave him a chance, gave him another chance, spoke to him privately, took power away from him for a while before giving it back to him. But every time Ibrahim returned to a position of power, his arrogance would come back, his greediness would come back. And there is a conflict at this time between Ibrahim and Suleiman's wife Horem, who we'll discuss in the next slide. That Ibrahim Pasha, he hates Horem, and he does not want her children to be the rulers after Suleiman. So there is this ongoing espionage between Ibrahim and his allies and Horem and her allies. So eventually, she manages to get some documents and records to show to Suleiman to prove that Ibrahim has been misusing funds. And when Suleiman sees this, it's clear that Ibrahim Pasha has been misusing funds. He gets a fatwa from Abu Sud Effendi and has Ibrahim Pasha executed. In the middle of the night, he's strangled to death, buried in an unmarked grave, and that is the end of Ibrahim Pasha. So why is this story important? Well, this story is important for many reasons. Number one, it shows us the humanity of these people, right? That these were people put into positions that we can't even imagine, and, you know, it got to their heads. Greed, arrogance, infighting, murder. This is what happens with political power. So we thank Allah for not giving us political power, because we don't know what we would do in that situation. Number two, it really shows us how different slavery was in the Muslim world compared to the West, right? I mean, right till the very end, Ibrahim was a slave. But he's the best friend of the king, the brother-in-law of the king, and at one point in time, the most powerful man in the world. It seems like the only thing they're making him a slave is that Suleiman never said you are free, and Suleiman could always hold that over his head, that remember, you my slave, don't grow too big for your boots, right? I still own you. But beyond that, there's no chains, there's no whoops, there's no holding a person back from aspirations, there's no mistreatment of people. Ibrahim was given, I would say, as a slave, he was given more opportunities and more power than most free people in the world today would ever experience. At the end of the day, all of that got to his head, and his greed and arrogance was the cause of his own downfall, and he was executed. But it remains a very interesting part of our history to study, to see how high and how powerful a slave could go. The other slave of Suleiman, who's interesting to look at, is really a person who some historians call the person individual for the one individual most responsible for the collapse of the Ottoman Empire. And that is Suleiman's wife, Horem Sultan.